Joe Biden and Mike Pence come to town to push their favorite candidates in the Florida governor's race. Meanwhile, Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis are campaigning down to the wire, holding another contentious debate. And as the election draws near, the party will go on as scheduled for Florida Georgia fans this weekend at the Jacksonville Landing. Some of the stories making headlines this week. And good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for being with us. Just ahead, a very busy week in the news. Our Friday Media Roundtable is here to break it all down for us. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's one of the most fun weekends of the year as Porch Fest returns to historic Springfield. We've got to look ahead to that. Plus, if you liked Hamilton, you need to go see 1776 at the Alhambra Theater. We'll speak to the stars of the cast. All of that ahead this morning. But first, it's Friday and time for our weekly media roundtable as we welcome David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Charles Griggs, who hosts the podcast Real Talk.
Good morning.
A new contributor, new Folio Weekly editor, Giorgio Valentino. Good morning and welcome to Jacksonville.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good to have you. And our business analyst, John Burr, back in Florida. Good to see you.
Great to be here.
Lots to talk about this morning, guys. Everything from a new study on opioids out this week from Mayo Clinic. And it looks like the party will go on after all for Florida Georgia fans this weekend at the Jacksonville Landing. But we begin with politics, the midterm election now just 11 days away. And you know what that means in Florida. Big name surrogates are descending on the state. Vice President Mike Pence came to town yesterday to rally in support of Republican gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis. Now, that event for DeSantis at the Prime Osborne drew about 300 supporters. Here's Pence.
But I'm here to talk about a man who I believe his whole life has been prepared for this moment, prepared to lead the great state of Florida to even greater prosperity and greater security. I mean, Ron DeSantis virtually embodies the best of Florida.
Now, Pence's rally comes 3 days after former Vice President Joe Biden held a similar rally on the UNF campus for the Democrat in this race, Andrew Gillum, and also Senator Bill Nelson. We begin the hour with a closer look at the race. Meanwhile, speaking of politics in Florida in the news, it looks like those pipe bombs that were sent to top Democrats around the country ran through a South Florida post office. We'll talk about that too, but we want your calls at 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online. Send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa in Jax. David Bauerlein, let's begin with you. We've gotten used to seeing former presidents and high profile names in politics come to Jacksonville. There are a lot of votes to be had here in these elections. And the latest poll shows Gillum and DeSantis, after their second and final debate, neck and neck. This race is going down to the wire. It's really one of the most fascinating in the country right now and getting a lot of national attention because these candidates are such polar opposites. They represent such starkly different visions for the future of the state.
An absolute clear choice between two candidates, two visions, and a real test of whether this blue wave that everybody keeps talking about is going to reverse 20 years of Republican rule in the state capitol. How high will the blue wave go? How many people will get swept up by it? It's a fascinating race, and it really shows the national attention that Florida's getting.
Yeah, you know, there's a story in Politico this morning, Charles, speaking to insiders at the White House, saying President Trump and his top associates are worried about the Florida results because the race for governor and for the U.S. Senate seat between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott is so tight. This could be a 51-49 race either way. Or we could see the winning party pull ahead by several points. The polls have kind of consistently showed, though, a one-point race either way. And so the turnout race now is on with early voting underway right now. It's really the level of intensity for a midterm election is not one that I've seen in many years.
Yeah, and adding to that is the fact that we really can't trust the polls. There's so many polls out there, and they've been so unreliable in the past that people aren't really going by. Both camps are saying, don't rely on the polls, just get out and vote. And I believe it's going to come down to two things. One is going to be turnout on both sides, both Republicans and Democrats have to get their people out, their bases out to vote, because both candidates are so polar opposite. You know, they represent two different things. And the other thing is that non-party affiliates have to find a place to land. You know, they have a choice between the two very different ways to lead the state of Florida, and they have to find a place to land. And it's very difficult to read right now where non-party affiliates are going with this election. And if you can get people out, so therefore the strategy is to make sure you get people out to vote.
Right.
And, you know,
not only that, Giorgio, this midterm is really a referendum on the president and his agenda. As I mentioned, he's worried about a wipeout in Florida. You can expect him to visit this state at least twice before November 6th. And when he goes out and campaigns for congressional candidates or other candidates, he'll say, if you vote for candidate X, you're voting for me. This is a referendum on the president as well.
Well, more so here in Florida than anywhere else, I think, because DeSantis has tied his fortune so closely with Trump and everything that he does. I mean, he's basically trying to ride the coattails of an emperor who has no clothes. So it's going to take a leap of faith. But it seems to me that's all he's got. So it's kind of a Hail Mary pass. The Republicans have made a mess of this state, and people know it.
And in what way do you think that?
Well, the most obvious sign is this red tide, is the pollution that is spreading all around the coast. It's hit my home county, Palm Beach County. I mean, once it came over to the Atlantic, I think that sealed the fate of the Republicans. People can see that with their own eyes, and people are very disgruntled with what's going on.
So you think once the red tide encircled the southern peninsula, it made its way around to the eastern side of Florida, whereas before it had sort of been on the southwest corner. You think that more than any other issue is going to drive this in Florida, maybe, or no?
I believe so. I think people are starting to believe their lying eyes.
The red tide brings the blue wave, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. I guess we'll see. But there are other issues. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, some of it is the healthcare issue. We saw DeSantis release an actual plan, you know, moments before the last debate that he didn't have before. Before, the Republicans had just been saying, we don't like Obamacare, we don't like Medicaid expansion. That's not the way to go, but they never really put forward a plan. Now, DeSantis has released a plan that you can actually, you know, pull apart and examine, whereas Gillum has had a plan all along. You know, he's clearly stated what he wants to do with healthcare when he gets into office. And so people have had a chance to say, I'm for this or I'm against that all along, up until this point. Now they can sort of look at the DeSantis plan and say, you know, that'll work or this won't work. Or, you know, and obviously that, again, they are two different ends of the spectrum.
If you're a strong Donald Trump supporter, you like Ron DeSantis because he's in line with this president on the issues that are really exciting the Republican base, particularly immigration. Now, that's not an issue that has come up a lot here in Florida, but it's one that this race has become nationalized because, as you pointed out, Ron DeSantis has tied himself so closely to this president, Giorgio. And so issues, normally you'd hear governors talking about these hyper-local and statewide-only issues. But the candidates have really started playing on a national level. It's fascinating how nationalized this election is.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing is, it's nationalized because Florida is the ultimate swing state. And everybody's looking ahead to 2020. If your party has the governor of Florida, you've got a great bully pulpit to turn this state toward that presidential candidate in 2020.
And the governor also has the authority to help redraw district lines, pick the next Supreme Court justices for Florida.
That's right.
There's a lot at stake here, Giorgio, just beyond setting a state budget. And these two candidates represent the divide in America, I think, almost perfectly. On the one end, you've got this very traditional hard right Republican, a member of the Freedom Caucus, or was in Washington. On the other hand, you've got an urban cosmopolitan in the form of Andrew Gillum, who's calling for Medicare for all. And so, you know, we look at the early voting turnout, and as of right now, I do believe, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, more Republicans than Democrats have voted by mail or in early voting. We've got 11 days until Election Day. And so the turnout numbers, there are several sites that update the turnout numbers. And it's incredibly to me to see how many people are refreshing this website all the time, because they're so interested in the turnout numbers. I've never seen that in a midterm election. Never.
If I may go back to one thing you mentioned about it, the candidates representing their respective parties, I don't think DeSantis represents the Republican Party.
You don't?
No, I think he represents a wing of the Republican Party. But I think that there are a lot of common sense Republicans I've talked to them. They're appalled by what's going on with the Republican Party as it now stands. And I think that those folks are starting to think about checking the power of the Republican Party.
And you think that some Republicans will cross party lines?
I believe they will.
What if you're a Republican, you don't like DeSantis, but you just cannot see Andrew Gillum as governor?
Yeah, that's difficult.
They see Gillum as too progressive for their values.
I mean, that's difficult in this climate for someone to step to the other side of the aisle just because they don't like their candidate. You know, that would happen 20 years ago. It's kind of difficult to see it now with all of the things that they've left unchecked at this point.
But I think a lot of talk about polarization is overblown. The people that I talk to are more than willing to step across the line and step across the aisle and vote for a Democrat if it means, you know, checking the power of the executive, for instance, and checking the power or trying to put their party back to a more centrist, common sense position, because they see their party as just going off the rails. And there's folks like the political cartoonist Ed Hall, who we featured on our cover last week, and he's a Republican. And he, ever since Trump won the nomination, he saw the direction the party was going in, and he decided to take a stand against it. And that stand includes voting for Democrats and supporting Democrats in their campaigns.
Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Mike Pence was in town this week to stump for Ron DeSantis. Joe Biden came the other day to stump for Andrew Gillum. And in a moment, we'll talk about the FBI investigation into a Florida mail center as the manhunt continues for whoever sent those pipe bombs out earlier this week. What are your thoughts about the midterms and our political state of affairs? It's 549-2937 right now. Herman is on the road somewhere. Hey, Herman, good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Ross, and that's why you are the doctor, because you know exactly where I'm going. And another part of that caveat is that I don't know if we should turn his mic on or not. I'm so mad with John Burr. My politics.
Why are you mad at John Burr?
Why is John Burr when you need him?
He's right here. He's here.
It's been eternity since I heard from John.
Oh, I see.
And I have based my politics based on Fred Matthews, John Burr, Tom Slade, Chris Newland. I'm not sure if it's Newland, but Newland and Collins and all the boys from the Polecats.
So,
I base my politics on what I don't hear from John Burr. I just hit the wall. I need his perspective in order to vote.
Well, so, we missed him. You know what? We missed him too.
I'm totally flattered, and I think I'll just leave right now. I'm not going to do any better than this.
I hope everything has been okay with him. But here's my question, and I'm kind of concerned. How is the discovery with all these pipe bombs going to affect or affect the election?
Yeah.
Will that play an effect? It will or not? That kind of stuff. So I'm interested in hearing that. And to everybody, and even John, welcome home.
That's right, Herman. Yeah, we welcome him back. He spends part of the year outside of Florida. Smart man. I wish we all could do that, actually, in the summer months. Okay. So Herman's question about these pipe bombs that were sent to former President Clinton and Hillary Clinton, Barack and Michelle Obama, CNN, Robert De Niro, Eric Holder, former CIA Director John Brennan. They were all sent to the homes of these people, most of them, all sent to top Democrats and very high-profile critics of President Trump. You saw this bizarre pushback in some quarters from defenders of the president saying, well, the Democrats are doing a false flag operation. They sent the bombs to themselves. which there's no evidence of that. But we'll see what the FBI does discover, because there is a manhunt for whoever did this, and they are looking at a South Florida mail center. Several of these packages went through a U.S. Postal facility in Opa-locka down in Miami-Dade, and so federal agents are trying to figure out who sent these. Now, his question was, will this affect the election? There are so many things going on right now that I don't know if we could say that this will make a difference in how people vote.
Well, first,
but it does speak to the tension in this country right now, and the divisiveness
does.
And the anger and the fear, really.
It's amazing that we're talking about politics and pipe bombs in the same sentence, but that speaks to the anger and the fear. I think we've got to know a lot more about who sent it and what the motives were before people start to really form an opinion on if whether it's going to affect how they vote. I think I think people are much more focused on healthcare, the environment, and the economy, very strong economy. I think those are the issues that are really going to. Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot immigration. Yeah, immigration's mm-hmm. always in there. So. I think this is kind of a distraction, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think if it turns out that the perpetrators are part of a organized group that has been involved in some form or fashion with politics, appeared with candidates on a stage, or as part of a group that has given support to a candidate, then yes, I think it would affect the election. If it's just one person who's sending these out, then I don't think it's going to affect the election.
Well,
certainly going to be surprised if they find out who did it before the election day.
Yeah, I think if they find out it had something to do with someone who's politically connected to someone, it won't make any difference, because we've been watching this build up along the way. We've heard rhetoric along the way, and people are, they're doing little things that we see, like people calling the police on African Americans for no particular reason. We've been seeing little instances like this that sort of, end up in doing these types of things. So if somebody got fingered for doing this who was affiliated with, either one of the parties, let alone be the Republicans, then someone would figure out a way to dilute it and say, hey, that really wasn't us, and it won't make a bit of a difference to the base. And it probably, at this particular point, based upon where we're headed, won't make any difference to non-party affiliates as well.
And by the way, this is just being reported as we speak. Another package out of Florida was sent to Senator Cory Booker. The FBI has recovered it, and they recovered a separate package in New York addressed to the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. So 12 now. 12 packages that the FBI is investigating, Giorgio.
Well, I think beyond the facts of the case, which we'll be investigating, we'll see what happened. The reaction by the right wing of the Republican Party is another one of these kind of seams where you can see the division, the schism in that Republican Party, because common sense Republicans are appalled at the things that Trump is saying about it. And the reaction, which is... everyone should come together and say, this is unacceptable. This is, this is terrorism. That's what it is. The right wing has always been reluctant to label right wing terrorism as terrorism. And so I think common sense Republicans see that and they're disgusted by it. And that's another thing that's leading them away from the party and given that desire to bring balance back to their party and to our system.
So Rose in Mandarin. Hi, Rose. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. The pipe bombs, were they sent in somebody, I don't know. I do think it's the Democrats playing the for me. And the main reason is because how did these packages, quote unquote, get past the Secret Service? Somebody said one of the guys on the one of those nights.
Well, they didn't. That's the whole point. They were intercepted before they harmed anybody. And only the president
has seen. And
only in. Come again.
I didn't hear that on the news. All I heard was they were sent to. Nobody said they were intercepted before they got to them.
Well, they clearly were flagged by someone before they were able to be detonated. But why would you think let me ask you, why would you think that the Democrats would do this to themselves? I'm just curious.
To, it's a poor me syndrome, and to get more attention to them and their views.
So you really believe that? You really think that they would do that, at purposefully send deadly bombs to prominent other Democrats? You really believe that?
Well, let me say this. I'm a registered Republican, but I vote for who I feel, regardless of party affiliation, is going to do the job that needs to be done for us. How would that package, all of that, they're all delivered same day, right about the same time, to all of these people? How is that?
Okay, you know what? Rose, we've got to find out. I mean, we're just going to have to wait. Thank you for the call. We're just going to have to wait and see what the FBI comes up with.
Investigations are for.
Yeah. Ed in Riverside. Ed, go ahead.
Yes. To my knowledge, maybe you guys can clarify, it hasn't even been verified that it actually has explosives. If it did, if it does, that's a lot of explosives. To somebody who has that much explosive to send, at least it might even be more. The other thing that's kind of suspicious here, this is just right when the early voting opened throughout the country, especially here in Florida, 2 weeks before the election. Now, I like the panel to switch for a second and assume that it would have been 11 bombs sent to prominent Republicans 2 weeks before the election. And supposedly bombs, because, again, we don't know. An expert on explosives said that this is the most kind of worst done bomb he ever seen. First of all, you don't put a timer when you send a bomb in the mail because you have no idea when it's going to get there or when it's going to be opened. So, but I want the panel to switch side and assume there was 11 supposedly pipe bombs sent to prominent Republicans. If they wouldn't think it would, it's a little bit suspicious.
Okay, thanks for that. And by the way, and I'm quoting Reuters, the devices have been made, they believe, according to federal law enforcement, from bomb-making designs that anyone can research on the internet. Mm-hmm. So anyone could have done this, literally anyone.
And the FBI said that they were treating them as if they were real explosives. So
okay, but as we've heard from those last two calls, people see this through such a partisan lens that there's clearly a perception out there among some voters that if the situation were reversed and Republicans were the targets of a wide spray of pipe bombs, I'm getting the impression from a couple of these callers that the media would treat this differently.
Well, you know, when you're sending pipe bombs through the mail, that's not politics. That's terrorism.
It doesn't matter who does it.
Yeah, to me, if the Republican were getting these pipe bombs in the mail, it's still a homicidal terrorists sending them, and it's the same. It's just as bad, and it's just as outrageous.
I think what people are asking for, and really before we understand, you know, the motivation and who's responsible, they're asking for more of a voice, a leadership voice from the top to say that this type of behavior is reprehensible, and we should all want it to stop, and we're not hearing that. And I think that's what is what people on the left are saying. They feel like because these bombs or these packages have been sent to leaderships or people who represent the left, they want to see everyone to step in and say, hey, this is bad for the country at large, not just for, you know, this is not just some type of political move.
I was at the Mike Pence, when he was here yesterday, he did say that. He said he condemns it in the strongest possible terms, of course. It's a number one priority for the FBI. I mean, I know there's always people out there who have whatever crackpot theories they have, regardless of political persuasion, but I've heard that message, at least from Pence during yesterday's campaign rally, and he was speaking on behalf of the Trump administration.
And he's next to the top. Well, we got think, this morning from tweets what did say something a little different.
The president speaks for the president, and he's speaking, he's singing a different tune than Mike Pence is.
Well, the president did tweet something out about dialing down the rhetoric, but at the same time, it must be said that everyone who's been targeted by these bombs is someone who's been a strong critic of the president and who the president has denounced at these frequent rallies that he holds. So that has been widely commented upon, let's just say. Matt at the beaches. Hi, Matt. Good morning.
Morning. So one thing that to me it is suspicious, but to me it's not necessarily going to be a Democrat, because of course all Republicans are going to say that. You know, the Russians, not to go into too high of a conspiracy, but you know, everyone wanted to make a big deal out of that in the 2016 elections. Why isn't it happening again? You know, when they try, they haven't found anyone, right? So who says this isn't coming from a third party to try and divide us? Because ultimately, all these statistics, I think you've been on your show and mentioned that this divide between Republicans and Democrats are becoming broader and broader over the decades. And that's one way to destroy a country from itself, is just to divide everybody. You know, tribalism came up on another show in the, yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the more division, the greater the chance, you know, of things falling apart.
Sure.
So just a thought, rather than just...
Who's to say it? Well, it's not another Russian op. You know, we don't know. We don't know.
Whoever. There's plenty of countries that, you know, that want to get us from the inside out.
Yeah, we just don't know yet, but thank you.
Let's just find out what the FBI comes up with. There's 12, 13 bombs now. And the more bombs, the more evidence.
More information, yeah.
And, you know, they seem to have zeroed in on where these things went through or were sent from. I think the FBI's got a pretty good handle on this, it looks like.
Right, they're going to find out who did it.
Let's just wait, you know, instead of throwing all these conspiracy theories around.
And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we're talking about the biggest stories of the week. We're going to move on now and talk about another issue that's really a public health emergency in Florida and nationwide. A new study out from Mayo Clinic finds that people throughout the country, nearly all Americans, would choose an alternative to opioids if they could following surgery. But few patients are actually talking to their doctors about this. As we talk about alternatives to opioids, give us a call at 549-2937. Basically, what Mayo is saying is that if you're a patient with pain, you should talk to your doctor about things like physical therapy, acupuncture, and other medications. We actually had the CEO of Florida Blue on the show the other day, and he was Pat Garrity, and he was challenged about the fact that insurance often doesn't cover alternative treatments to pain, like acupuncture and other things. But basically, his response was, well, we're funding sort of pilot programs on that, and as soon as we have more data, we can hopefully more widely cover these alternative treatments. A lot of patients, if they can, they seek them out themselves, because opioids are addictive. It is a public health emergency in this country. The Duval County Morgue can't keep up with the literally can't keep up with the bodies that are coming in. And so, you know, how much responsibility do you guys think is incumbent upon physicians and pharmaceutical giants to do a better job of finding an alternative to this med that's caused such a deadly epidemic?
Well, there was an interview with Jamie Lee Curtis, who's in the Halloween movies, and she was talking about how she had a 10-year addiction to opioids, and it all started because she was prescribed opioids after having some minor cosmetic eye surgery. Mm-hmm. So if people are already prone or have proclivities to addiction, that can be the quote gateway drug, is something that's prescribed in a doctor's office, and then that patient afterwards wants to keep getting that rush. And so then it becomes a case of trying to get the drug whichever way they can. So yes, there's absolutely a more needs to be done at the medical level to prevent that kind of episode triggering a lifelong addiction.
Yeah. And I think it is being done. I mean, maybe the horse is out of the barn, certainly it is, but I think the medical community has gotten the message that these hydroquinones and these other things were way overprescribed, and it was a very harmful and stupid thing to do. I'll tell you, the industry that's waiting to just jump into the vacuum here is the medical marijuana industry, because they are talking about pain relief all over the place for everything from cancer treatments to, recovering from operations. So look for the medical marijuana industry to really try to take advantage. Well, jump into this fray.
doctors have been harmlessly, what they felt like was harmlessly prescribing these medications over the years because just because it was covered and it was easy for patients to get their hands on. And once it became, you know, it became clear that this was the wrong path, some doctors do try to get their patients, you know, engaged in other types of therapy that's going to be run a smaller risk of them being addicted. But there are barriers out there, and those barriers need to be addressed.
Rasa in St. Augustine. Rasa, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. No, that's what came up on caller ID, but my name's actually Derek. Rasa's my wife.
Oh, that's your wife? Caller ID says, Rasa, tell her I said hello.
Absolutely. So I just moved down from Massachusetts recently, but when I was up there, I had my wisdom teeth out. I only had two taken out. It wasn't that bad, but they prescribed me a massive bottle of Vicodin. I took, you know, one or two for a couple days, felt miserable on it, and I stopped taking it, but I still have this huge bottle of opioids that I have nothing to do with just sitting on the counter. I had a friend of mine bring me a peanut butter cookie with cannabis in it, and I have to say that was 100 times better. I didn't feel crabby, I wasn't groggy, and at the same time, it managed the pain.
Good to hear. Thanks for sharing your testimonial. You know, medical marijuana is on the ballot this fall too, Giorgio, in the form of the race for agriculture commissioner. You've got a couple of candidates that have taken somewhat varying positions on medical marijuana, but clearly the voters in Florida have settled that issue. They want access to medical marijuana for pain relief and other things. So it's interesting to hear the testimonials about how people have reacted to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the general trend all across the country is that, you know, that this is going to happen eventually everywhere. And to go back to the opioid crisis in general, I mean, you'd see this crisis exists at the intersection of not just medicine, but industry and regulation also. So the entry of medical marijuana into the mix is part of regulated medicine. And we can't leave it to the pharmaceutical industry or even the doctors who are prescribing the pills to police themselves. I mean, there has to be a role for strong regulation when it comes to people's health because we're paying the consequences for that. And we have to clean up the mess that they made.
Yeah. And for the guy who just called, actually, when it comes to the disposing of unwanted prescriptions, like your bottle of Vicodin that you called and said you just don't have anything to use it for, actually, this Saturday, tomorrow, October 27th, is National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. And so it's a day set aside for people to return their unwanted prescriptions. Let me Google this right now as we're sitting here talking about this. So I hope he's still listening so that you know what to do with your Vicodin. Go to takebackday.dea.gov. It's Take Back Day, and it's a chance for you to do something with your bottle of Vicodin. There are collection site locators all over the country. You can search at that website, takebackday.dea.gov. Okay, last but not least, the party will go on this weekend at the Jacksonville Landing. A permit application at the Landing to host Florida Georgia festivities had actually been on hold, in part due to the recent mass shooting at the outdoor marketplace. But after much back and forth with the city, the party will go on for Florida Georgia fans. It will actually be a very closely watched game this year for college football pundits and the RV City, which typically sprouts up all around WJCT every year at this time, is in full swing already. You guys had to make your way through it as you came through this morning. So good news for the Landing.
It is good news for the Landing, which has had a lot of bad news lately. So that's a big moneymaker. It's probably the biggest single event they have all year long. And certainly for fans, it's a good deal too. People have been used to going for years and years to that. So the idea that people would all show up at the Landing and see that you're not allowed to come in, that would have been a big turnoff for a lot of people who have seen that as part of the tradition. How long it's going to last, who knows? I mean, year to year, it's a questionable what the Landing's fate going to be.
I didn't think there was ever any doubt, really, to be honest, because the Landing is an iconic you know, location for Florida, Georgia, and many other events that go on annually here. So it just was a matter of the, you know, both sides coming together and making sure that all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed.
Well, it would also be very hard to explain why you had political rallies at the landing and then a few days later you wouldn't let people come and have a drink at the football for the football
right.
game. I mean, you know, that doesn't
make
sense.
Now, what do you guys think about the safety concerns in the wake of the shooting at the game bar? The landing has to limit crowd size at any given time to 7,500. They have to pay for JFRD to staff entrance and exit points and allow no more than 5 10-by-10 bars on the exterior common area. In other words, limit the world's largest outdoor cocktail party a little bit, is what it sounds
well,
like.
Well, with an emphasis on a little bit, I mean, you know, 50 yards from here as we sit, there's plenty of cocktail drinking going on.
Yes, there are.
So, as they say, they will be drinking.
They will.
So, you know,
and there will be football. Enjoy the weekend, and thanks for listening, and thanks for calling, everyone, and thanks to our media panel, John Burr, Giorgio Valentino, Charles Griggs, and David Bauerlein. Guys, good to see you, and thanks for coming. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still to come, if you loved Hamilton the musical, you'll love 1776. That was the original one of these types of plays, and it's at the Alhambra Theater. We'll talk to the cast, but up next, Porch Fest is just around the corner. Back in a moment.
Story to tell? Since 2003, StoryCorps has been collecting and archiving stories from all over the country. From November 18th to December 21st, StoryCorps will be right here in Jacksonville. StoryCorps is the two-time Peabody Award-winning nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories. If you've ever listened to their NPR program, you know how powerful and touching these stories can be. To find out how StoryCorps can record your story, go to wjct.org/events.
The stars will align themselves again. And in his house, Etrilia, dead Cthulhu waits dreaming.
The evil god Cthulhu awakens. Who among us can resist his call? H.P. Lovecraft's The Call of Cthulhu, Sunday night at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. You know 630 City? It's the familiar place you go when you need to know. During severe weather conditions, our 630 City Call Center operates around the clock, equipping citizens with information they may need to make decisions and resolve issues. Be sure to add their number, 630 City, to your favorites, and remember to pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide from your neighborhood public library. Be Jack's ready.
We're waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp of an eaglet being born. Waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp on this humid Monday morning in this congressional incubator. God knows the temperature's hot enough to hatch a stone, let alone an egg.
All right, the new musical on stage at the Alhambra Theater is a reminder that partisan rancor is nothing new in this country. 1776, a musical revolution, tells the story of how America won its independence from Great Britain. The original Hamilton. It's been around for a while. It's a great show. We have the stars of the show. Kevin Anderson as John Adams, Mark Poppleton as Ben Franklin, and Alexander Molina as John Dickinson. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Kevin, let's start with you. You play John Adams. You've been in dozens of Broadway shows. You've been in movies, including one with Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Which movie was that?
Sleeping with the Enemy.
Nice. Yeah,
when
okay.
I was a little baby.
So you played John when you were a little baby. So you played John Adams.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about how he is portrayed in this production.
Well, he's pretty aggressive. He's basically the cheerleader to getting the Congress to just even to vote on independence, and he's sort of the one. He's the agitator. He's the one who gets things
he's
going.
He's the one stirring the pot. Right.
Exactly.
Okay, so Mark and Alexander, who play Ben Franklin and John Dickinson, a lesser-known revolutionary. This is the largest cast in Alhambra history. Is that right? 26 people in this show?
Yeah,
big cast.
So. Yeah, it's a big cast.
So it's a big production.
Yes, and all men except for two women.
Who are the females in the show?
Abigail Adams. And Martha Jefferson.
Okay.
And they're beautifully played.
Okay, so this is a great show for parents to take their kids to. It's just a musical living history, it sounds like. And I've always heard it's such a great show to go see.
It's very educational. There's things that a lot of people don't forget about, that slavery was talked about, you know, in these original meetings and discussions, and, you know, being fought to keep that in. And there was a lot of, you know, disagreement amongst the Congress about that, and people forget that, you know. So
people forget how divisive it truly was in the colonies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then on top of like kids going to see it and learning something, there's a lot of very catchy music, which is really great for the full family.
Yeah.
So it's got a pretty good magical balance of you're going to go learn something and you're also going to be entertained thoroughly.
When did this first hit Broadway? The 70s, I want to say?
I believe
in the 70s.
Right around the time of the sesquicentennial?
Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, the songs are great. And now tell me about your costumes, and do you speak with English accents when you play your parts?
There are all different accents.
All different accents.
Yeah.
What kind of accents do you all adopt?
I guess my character, he's a loyalist, so he's definitely for... continuing our partnership with England. So I definitely lean heavily toward an English accent, but even at times I'll try to make it a little more American, which is really just me like falling out of my accent, but having a great excuse to fall back.
Yeah. John Dickinson is not a name that we think of when we think of the American Revolution. So tell me a little bit about John Dickinson.
Yeah. So, John Dickinson is the, he's actually an amalgamation of a few characters in history, but he is the opposite of John Adams. He is high class. He's very he likes the finer things, and he doesn't like the way John agitates everything and stirs the pot and creates disorder.
Causing trouble.
Totally. And I think and his principles are exactly the opposite. He doesn't want independence at all. He believes that the best thing for the country is to stick with England. And then so you see these two men really fighting for what they believe, and really fighting hard, but then at the end of the day, making incredible compromises for the good of the country, which is really something that is great to watch.
Really unusual these days.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Actually putting aside their partisan bickering to do what's right for the... Imagine that. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, a quick break, and then we'll talk a little bit more with the cast of 1776, A Musical Revolution, on stage now at the Alhambra Theater.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Florida law requires drivers to give at least a 3-foot clearance when passing bicyclists. A violation means a traffic fine and license points.
Learn more at waynehogan.law. World Affairs Council and UNF partnering to engage citizens in becoming better informed participants in the global community. November 13th, Newsweek Beijing Bureau Chief Melinda Liu, Understanding China, How the West Got China Wrong. More information, worldaffairsconciljax.org.
An entire family worked at the same auto plant in Michigan until it closed during the recession.
Like losing somebody. Like losing your life, you know?
Now with unemployment near record lows, what does the recovery look like to them?
It seems like a fantasy world or something in here, you know?
I'm Ari Shapiro in Michigan with views of the economy and the midterms this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we traveled to the moon and back with Neil Armstrong in the new film, First Man.
We have every intention of coming back.
But you might not.
How well did it capture the personal side of Armstrong, the space race, or the excitement of space travel? That's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The hunt is on for whoever sent pipe bombs to some of the president's critics. CNN wrestles with reporting the news and being one of the bombers' targets. Also, the midterm campaigns hit the home stretch, the Red Sox round the bases, and Sandra Day O'Connor steps away from public life. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. As we speak with the cast of 1776, A Musical Revolution. If you're looking for an amazing show to take your kids to and educate them about how America became the nation we are, this is a great idea. The show runs through November 18th as we talk with the stars. Kevin Anderson as John Adams, Mark Poppleton as Ben Franklin, and Alexander Molina as John Dickinson. Okay, Mark, you play the great diplomat, Ben Franklin,
yes.
Whereas John Adams was this pushy, blunt, you know, not the most socially adept guy, but he got things done. You are the diplomat in this scenario. Tell me about what it's like to play such an icon as Ben Franklin.
Yeah, well, it's great because he's sort of the yin to John Adams' yang.
Yeah.
And I have to keep him pulled in, so... he's bawdy, he's funny, he likes to make jokes when it gets very serious. He likes to lighten it up.
He always wanted to lighten it up.
Yes.
Now, do you wear a wig? Do you guys all wear wigs in this show?
This is real.
Your hair's real.
Except for John. I got a weave done.
You did a weave.
Yeah,
what was that like for you?
I've never had it. And she said, we're going to try it. And I usually have like a buzzed head. I mean, last year I was... totally bald as Daddy Warbucks. And this year I let it grow out because they said, try and let it grow out as long as you can. And then they put it in. It's interesting. I thought I would really not like it, but it's pretty cool.
Does it itch?
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Is it real hair?
Yeah, it's real hair.
Got real
the only
hair.
Thing
got, yeah.
That's strange is when you wash it, it's really heavy. It feels like my head is getting pulled back and off. So.
Oh, man.
But it's cool.
Well, it looks great. You look like a Revolutionary War era person. It's funny, too. I guess I should reveal that my grandmother was in the Daughters of the American Revolution, and I am actually a direct descendant of John Adams and John Quincy Adams.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. I guess that's where I get my blunt personality. It's gotten me in trouble. I wish I was more like Ben Franklin, but... Anyway, it's so good to see you guys and have a great show. Go get your tickets now for 1776 at the Alhambra Theater, live on stage through November 18th. Guys, break a leg, and thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to take a very quick break, and in a moment, a look ahead to Porch Fest and our election coverage.
Discover new music at the Electro Lounge Monday through Saturday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. We've got your chill. Tune in and enjoy fresh music from around the world.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
Welcome back. In a moment, we're going to tell you about our live on-the-go broadcast from Porch Fest next Friday. But first, WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo is here with some fun Friday news and notes. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. So we are announcing the winners of our social media restaurant contest. This is called Duval Dishes. We went to our social media audience and we asked them, what is the quintessential restaurant of six different neighborhoods in Jacksonville? And people voted, and we are going to be rolling out the winners on our website today. We have videos of all of the winning restaurants that you'll be able to see the inside, see the food that you can get at these restaurants. So without further ado,
sure.
The winners.
Drum roll, please.
The winners of the Duval Dishes restaurant contest. So on the north side, we have Blue Boy Sandwiches on Norwood Avenue. And one voter said, one sandwich, one meal. You'll end up taking part of it home with you if you're not super hungry when you arrive.
Okay. So you get a lot for your money there.
You get a lot for your money at Blue Boy Sandwiches. On the west side, our winner was Harp's American Pub and Grill, also known as Harpoon Louie's.
Love Harpoon Louie's.
Yes, on Herschel Street. And what voters said about Harp's was great food, not a cookie cutter restaurant. Food is fresh, cooked properly, and at a fair price. And we'll have a video of Harp's up today. On the south side, our winner was Tommy's Brick Oven Pizza on Southside Boulevard.
They do amazing pizza.
That's what I hear, the best pizza in town. I haven't tried it yet, but seeing that video definitely makes me want to check that one out.
They do it the old-fashioned Italian way is what I've been told. Yeah, really good brick oven over there.
All right.
And so last but not least?
The Urban Core, we had The Fox on St. John's Avenue, the diner.
I love The Fox. Oh, these are all the exact choices I think all of us in the newsroom would have made.
Yeah. I love the comment about The Fox. It says, classic diner where blue hairs have yummy breakfast along with blue-haired hipsters.
That's exactly right.
All right, rounding this out, Melissa, we have Arlington Bono's Barbecue and at the beaches, Sinati's, where you have to go for the pumpkin donuts this time of year.
Excellent. Go to WJCT's website to look at all the winners of our Duval Dishes contest. And 1 week from today, we will be live from another restaurant, Uptown Cafe in historic Springfield, as we bring to you all the fun and excitement of Porch Fest in Springfield, which is not this weekend, but next weekend. Listen for that. And thanks, Jessica. Again, our website at wjctnews.org has all of the restaurant winners. Thanks for listening. 1A's up next. Our rebroadcast of this show will be on tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.